Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of the new screensavers is brought to you by 23andMe, an online genetic analysis company that helps you understand your 23 pairs of chromosomes, your DNA. Get over 75 genetic reports today and start exploring your DNA at 23andMe.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS.
Nintendo's new fighting game, ARMS. A review of the Huawei Watch 2 and Superman Vision with the FLIR 1 Pro thermal camera. Live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers.
Welcome to the new Screensavers, episode 108. It's Saturday, June 10th. I'm Nathan Olivares-Giles, and I'm here with...
Father Robert Vallisere, the digital Jesuit.
We are filling in for Leo Laporte. He's on vacation. I think he's, like, climbing in, like,
he was on a mountain, like doing some steps. Lots of step work.
Yeah, we're going to hear a lot from him when he gets back about his cool vacation. But in the meantime, we're holding things down over here. And we've got a great, great show. We're going to play some video games. We're going to play Nintendo's new title, ARMS, on the Switch. I think it's a big hit, and Padre is going to play it for, like, the second time.
So I played it briefly right before the show. And I got to say, because I actually had to move my body.
Yeah.
Actually, I probably didn't have to move my body that much, but I'm a little sweaty right now.
Yeah. But it was a good little workout, but you actually did beat me a couple times.
I was actually not facing the screen. So that was 100% button mashing.
It was like arm flurry. We're also going to check out the FLIR 1 camera, which basically gives you that, like, predator style vision of the world, thermal sensing.
You know, I'm wondering if that's a generational thing, because there must be people who did not see the original Predator.
Yeah.
But anyone who did, anytime you see, like, a thermal image, you got to hear that predator sound, like,
that's like the first thing I think of when I see it.
Get to the chopper.
So we're stoked about that. Mm-hmm. Jason Howell is also going to have a review of the Huawei Watch 2, which, you know, Android Wear, where is it going? Here's the newest device.
You are showing your iOS-ness here right now. Okay? They make some good products for Android.
They got some good stuff. They got some good stuff. And I really did like the previous Huawei watches.
Yes.
So the pressure's on Huawei. We'll see what you got. Megan Maroney's also going to have a review of Windows Hello. We got a lot of good stuff. But first, let's get into some news. It was a big, big week.
We had a busy week. There were, of course, the big event. WWDC. Everyone was happy about it.
Yeah.
Now, you cover the Apple world more closely than I. Mm-hmm. Were there any surprises?
I got to say there were really none. Pretty much everything that we saw from Apple at WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference, had already been reported. Their HomePod speaker, which is kind of their answer to Google Now and to Amazon Echo, that had been reported for months. Their iMac Pro is kind of something to hold folks over until the new Mac Pro replacement comes out. That had been rumored for a while. We know that we're going to get new versions of all their operating systems at WWDC. That's what happens every single year. I will say the one thing that was maybe a little bit of a surprise, but it had been something that, you know, iPad Pro and iPad users like myself had been asking for years, were iPad-specific features that make the iPad more of a laptop replacement.
That's actually the language that I've heard the most. Mm-hmm. Some of the other stuff is interesting. It's good to see Apple get into AR. It's good to see them give us a new iMac. It's good to see semi-revamp on the laptops. But the fact that you can now treat your tablet more like a laptop. In fact, I'd even say closer to what you can get out of a Surface.
Mm-hmm.
People are saying, okay, well, maybe this is the new shot in the arm to the tablet market.
Yeah, and you know, I think what we've seen with tablet sales and them slowing down over the last few years is that people hold on to their tablets the way they do laptops. You're not going to be upgrading your iPad every couple years the way that you would your phone, right? Or if you're a real enthusiast, like really hardcore about it every single year or even sooner, right?
Well, I mean, there was a difference between the iPad 1 and the iPad 2 and maybe even to the 3 and to the Mini. But once the hardware all started catching up with what you wanted to do with it, it doesn't matter if it's 150 times faster if the old version was just fast enough for you.
Exactly.
So now they've actually equipped it with some features that can take advantage of that hardware and that firepower. That's actually a decent move. I kind of like that.
Yeah, and they're all kind of centered around productivity. It's multitasking. It's actually using multiple apps at one time. It's being able to move between clusters of apps and spaces. It's making the Apple Pencil more useful for different applications. And even simple stuff like copying from one app and being able to paste into another. So these are kind of the sort of things you take for granted on a laptop, but the sort of things that have kept tablets from being... And you know, the Surface has it a little bit. It's interesting. The iPad's always felt more mobile first, and the Surface has always felt like a laptop trying to be a tablet. Hopefully, we'll find some sort of common ground here in the middle. But even having these spaces to be able to cluster your apps into, hopefully that'll allow you to get between different applications so you can do what you need to do quicker.
Now, I know that we stand on opposite sides of this particular aisle, but for me... tablets are done. I don't do tablets. I have a tablet mode in my notebook I never use. I could do it if I wanted to. It doesn't seem to be a good form factor to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I laugh whenever I go to a press room and I see someone trying to like submit a story typing on a wireless keyboard and an iPad.
Yeah.
And this is not an Apple thing. It's a tablet thing for me.
Yeah.
I carry only the devices that I need to carry because I travel a lot.
Yeah.
And for me, that's my Ultrabook, which weighs 2 pounds, and it's my phone, which weighs 1/4 pound. There is no room in my bag for a tablet because it duplicates the functionality of both, which seems to me kind of a waste. But you're big on tablets.
I'm big on tablets, but again, I'm coming from a different perspective. So, one of the things that sold me on the iPad Pro and the Apple Pencil is I'm able to draw on it, and I like to draw. So being able to illustrate and to be able to use a computer in a different way, that gets rid of... the tablet I used to carry around my bag anyways, that gets rid of the sketchbook that I'd normally bring with me. But I've always been kind of compromising my computing experience by, when I do go on the road, taking a tablet and a phone with me instead and leaving my laptop at home, right?
Right.
So it's like there are just certain things that I know I'm not going to do on the road because it's just not as easy to do or not as much fun.
Yeah. And I'm enough of a tech head to say, look, it's a tool.
Yeah.
And tools will be good for different people. And for you, a tablet may work. Totally what doesn't work for me, but I understand.
Yeah.
It's an interesting piece of tech.
Now, one area where I think we can agree on here is we both like really, really powerful computers.
Yes.
And in your case, you're even often building some yourself.
I love that. Yes.
What do you think of the iMac Pro?
This is such a departure from what we've seen from Apple. There's a lot of back channel discussion of why this is, but the iMac Pro is upgradable.
Yeah.
Never before. The memory is removable and the CPU is not soldered onto the board. Mm-hmm. So technically, if you were so inclined,
you could open up the back.
You could open it up, give it a memory bump, and even bump up the CPU. That's amazing, actually. That's quite nice.
That's a radical departure for what Apple's iMacs have been, which is really this kind of self-contained, don't open it. If there's a problem, take it to an Apple store or whatever. And, of course, Apple is still trying to push the idea that this is also upgradable through accessories, through expansion, through Thunderbolt/USB-C.
No.
You're not into that. You're still not feeling
that, do not believe in having a chain of 14 devices on my desk. Because it's no longer a desktop, it's now a desk.
Interestingly enough, though, that's what they attempted with the original Mac Pro trash can PC, which, wasn't necessarily a huge seller. It's for a niche market anyways. But Apple has said that a new Mac Pro will be coming at some point. So really, this iMac Pro is kind of a holdover device. If you're an architect, if you're an animator, if you're a designer, if you're a film editor, and you need a new pro-level machine, and you're in that Apple ecosystem, you're Final Cut loyalist or whatever, then this is the device you would buy. But I kind of feel like in a few months, we're going to be seeing whatever their other pro computer is coming, And I kind of feel like if you can, you really should be waiting, right?
And here's the thing. Looking at this, I mean, it is nice. It's very nicely engineered. And Leo is big on this style of computer. Because when you integrate the screen with the motherboard and all the components, you can do a lot of things that you can't with just a standard plug-in type desktop.
Yeah.
Yes, it makes it more specialized, but he likes this now. Mm-hmm. However, and I know this is going to torch some eyebrows here, but if I was going to spend this much money on this kind of format of a computer, I would probably wait for the next Microsoft Studio, the Surface Studio.
You know what? Here's the thing. I want to love the Microsoft Surface Studio, but it can't power a VR headset, and I'm also
yet,
right? So until it does, it's a non-starter for me.
Well,
I'm
not going to spend
that much.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before because the Surface Studio, that was actually a three-year-old product.
Yeah.
Microsoft kind of put it out in the wild just thinking, okay, well, we've got this in the development box, so let's just bring it out. Mm-hmm. They did not expect it to sell that much and do that well. The next version, they are actually going to power it up.
Well, they need to. And that's actually one of the things that I saw at WWDC that I was encouraged by was Apple is finally going to be putting out machines that are virtual reality compatible. It's still super niche market, still super early adopter, still not mainstream. But if it's ever going to get there, we need to be seeing moves like this. And I was excited to see that. There's also this external graphics development kit, which is basically a GPU inside of a box that you can plug into your Mac, things that have existed in the PC world forever. And now we're going to be seeing that. And that'll be compatible with Mac OS High Sierra, the new version of their operating system. But one of the most exciting things to come out of WWDC, I think, was Apple's initial plans for augmented reality.
Yes.
And at Facebook F8, we saw Facebook come out and tell their developers, hey, we're going to build augmented reality stuff into a camera inside of our namesake app. Come build your apps on our system. Look at what a wonderful future it'll be. At Google I.O., Google had their pitch. Hey, we're going to have like a new version of, Google Goggles, basically. It's going to be AR equipped. It's going to have some AI features. Come build your apps on our platform. We've seen what Microsoft's trying to do with HoloLens. And now we see here Apple throwing down the gauntlet with AR Kit and saying, all right, the camera that's on every iPhone, the most popular single phone that is out there, it's going to have AR features in iOS 11, which is coming this fall. Build your AR apps here. And out the gate, it will be the biggest, they argue, AR platform simply because the sheer number of people who will have access to
doesn't necessarily mean they have the most apps.
It's funny math. It's also a compelling argument to developers when you're like, okay, I want to build an AR app. Where am I going to do it first, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing. People have been writing me saying, so is this going to take on Microsoft HoloLens? And no.
It's not the same kind of thing.
It's not the same type of technology. Microsoft is actually pretty much alone. As far as the big tech corporations who are established, who can throw their weight behind a standard or a product, Microsoft is in a great spot. And they've got enough partners coming on right now where they can make something that is incredibly useful inside of a professional development area.
And that's their bet. Professional development. That's their bet. You're going to spend thousands of dollars on a headset. You're going to wear this to work every day. Google, Facebook, and Apple, meanwhile, are saying, what's the phone you got in your pocket? Let's bring AR there.
Yes.
And it's a different conversation,
really. And I would argue that Apple coming in with this technology, with what they showed off, actually puts them ahead of Google, which is weird because Google's been playing in this space for years.
They have. I'm sure that the folks at Mountain View would not like to hear that.
They would not like to hear that. But the problem is, Apple, they studied it.
Yeah.
And then they brought out something that they think people will actually want to use.
Yeah.
I love Tango.
Yeah.
I think Google Tango is one of the coolest techs I've played with in the last 3 years. However, it's always, here's a cool demo, here's a cool demo, and then you say, well, who's developing for it? Well, we don't know yet.
Yeah, and ultimately, the success or failures of each of these initiatives are going to come down to third-party developers.
That's where they're shown at developer conferences.
So, okay, we'll wrap things up with WWDC with one more thing, the HomePod. This is Apple's answer to Amazon's Echo speakers, which I think sound like crap.
Yes.
Also, Google Now, the Google Home speaker, which sounds a little bit better, but still doesn't sound too great. And actually, Apple came out and said, our speaker is going to be a lot more expensive, but it's going to sound way better than all of them. They're saying it's basically on par, if not a little bit better than what you would get from like a Sonos Play 3, which is pretty high-end home streaming speaker. But of course, there are questions over, well, how good will Siri be in this product? How useful will Siri be in this product? And how will that compete against the other voice-controlled AI assistants from Google and from Amazon.
I look, I am very, very much looking forward to having a HomePod on the shelf next to my Echo and my Google Home that are all turned off and put in their boxes because after I reviewed them, I put them away. I get it.
You know what? That's exactly what I've done with Google Home and the Echo speakers. I'm right there with you. None of the voice-controlled assistants are useful enough for me to want to use them every day. One of the reasons why I've also put them away in boxes is because there are tremendous privacy compromises that you make, especially with the way that Google and Amazon treat user data, that Apple says they're going to be treating privacy differently. And they say that, of course, with all of their products. And it makes sense. They're not trying to create some sort of profile on you to sell ads or create a demographic profile of you to sell you products from a marketplace. They're trying to sell you more hardware. So they actually have a different business model behind what they're doing. But because Amazon and Google know so much more about each of us,
right,
and almost a creepy level.
They all have the integration.
That allows their AI to do more.
I'm with you in that I like Apple's approach here because unlike the Echo and unlike Google Home, they've started with a speaker and they've added a voice assistant. Those are all voice assistants that they've added a speaker to.
Yes.
You may actually get people who say, no, I just bought it for the speaker and everything else is bonus.
Yeah.
That actually might be a good way to get in here. However, like you said, the technology is very readily makeable. We've made them on know-how. It's not hard to do.
Yeah.
So the question is, can it do something useful? For a lot of people, they can. For me, not so much. But Amazon and Microsoft and Google have so much more information that they can draw on than Apple does.
Yeah, and you know, one of the selling points for HomePod here is that it's a musicologist, so it'll be able to understand your music tastes, recommend music for you, and if they're going to take this music-centered approach to selling you on this device, that actually makes sense because you know the music features really aren't there for these other competing products, so we'll see where it goes, but I think it's about $350. Going to be shipping in December-ish, space gray and white. You know, basically what you would expect.
I'm pretty sure we've pre-ordered a few for the studio already, we'll get to play.
Yeah, but that's exciting stuff. Now, getting out of the world of Apple.
No more Apple.
Let's talk about another company that just ate up the news cycle this week, Uber.
All the wrong reasons.
There was a flurry, one thing after the other. So I guess we should start with Uber hired an outside law firm to basically look through sexual harassment complaints.
This should have been done 18 months ago.
Yeah, and they fired 20 people. Now, this is actually separate from they brought in a former Attorney General, Eric Holder, to come in and basically do a review of the company and their processes and their culture. And so this is separate from that. We still haven't seen Holder's report or what will come of that. But nonetheless, 20 people were let go over sexual harassment.
Now, the scuttlebutt is the 20 people are just sort of the most egregious case. It's just like, oh my gosh, why is this person still working for you?
Yeah.
The other investigation is looking at the systematic parts of the company that is allowing this to flourish inside of Uber.
Yeah.
And that's going to be scathing. I mean, that it's going to go from top to bottom. Essentially, they have no accountability. Their reporting is flawed. It's cyclical. So you're actually reporting sexual abuse to the person who may have sexually harassed you.
Yeah.
A big problem. Yeah, it's a big problem.
It's a big problem. Along with that, and I'm glad you brought up the question of culture.
Yep.
There was also reports that the Uber CEO, Travis Kalanick, emailed sex rules, quote-unquote sex rules, to employees before a company retreat about a year ago. And in looking at this story, I was reading over it, and it looks like and it was reported by The New Yorker, it looks like the sort of thing that you would see sent to like a fraternity, like, hey guys, like, don't throw kegs off the second story.
That's exactly
if you have sex with someone, make sure that you have consent from them. And then if you puke anywhere, there's going to be a $200 charge for that. And you know, all these sorts of things. There was also some like little jokes like, oh, you know, also if someone works in your direct chain of command, don't have sex with them. And then, you know, him saying, this, I'm the CEO, I won't be having sex
with anybody. That's a nudge, nudge, wink, wink memo. You know, okay, I have to put this out, but guys, we're all going to be cool, right? We're all going to be cool. It's like, no, you're a company now. You're a large publicly traded company.
It's time to grow up. Yeah, you're not a club. You're not just a frat house or whatever. So interesting kind of, and this speaks back to culture, like, it seemed like, hey, you know, we know these things are going to happen, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like a joking matter. But this is serious stuff.
Yeah.
And to even have to make these requests So there's that. An Uber executive could face criminal charges for his handling of the medical records of a rape victim. Basically, a passenger in India was raped, and this executive had the medical records for about a year and was showing them to other people in the company. That executive has been let go. So that executive's name was Eric Alexander. He was the president of Uber's business in the Asia Pacific region. And that's a huge growth area. And, Mr. Alexander was someone who was very important to Uber's expansion and growth. And this is not just like, you know, this is someone who was doing real work in helping Uber grow. So it's a loss in terms of that sense for the company, but also it's like mind boggling. You read it and you're like, what? Why would someone be doing that for so long? And Uber hasn't quite said that. But the fact that they fired him, it sounds like, in fact, that was the wrong thing to do.
Well, this is part of the changing environment that Uber finds itself in. Because you may remember, when they first started, their whole philosophy is, we just enable people to make money on a side gig. They're not our employees. We have no responsibilities other than they're using our app.
Yeah.
That went away really quickly. The courts, both in United States, India, it's like three or four European countries have all decided, no. If they're getting money from you, you're now their employer, and you're responsible for what they do on the job. They haven't caught up to that yet. And this goes back into the culture. The culture is still, we're a startup that's just doing something cool, not we're now a company and we need to have clear policies on how you act when you are representing the company.
Yeah.
And yeah, Uber's caught up in that.
Yeah, so a lot of crazy news. We're going to wrap things up here, but there's some that say that the culture could be changed, and they hired an Apple music marketing executive, Bozama St. John, to head that up. So we'll see how much of an impact they can make. But Father Robert, you're actually going to be showing us off the new FLIR One Pro thermal camera. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited about that. I've played with these a little bit in the past, but you're going to tell us what they can actually be used for. I mean, more than just something fun to look at, they can actually genuinely be useful, right?
Indeed. Yeah, it's one of these pieces of technology that it's a novel thing. Mm-hmm. That the first time you see, okay, that's cool, but I don't know what I'm going to actually use it for. But FLIR has actually developed the technology to the point and brought the price point down to the level at which it's now a useful tool. It's something that people can afford, and it's something that people will use in situations that they didn't previously think of.
Awesome. So we're going to have more on that. But first, let's thank 23andMe, one of the sponsors of this episode. I'm super excited about 23andMe, a fantastic service if you guys haven't tried. Actually, Father Robert, you did try this out, right?
I did. It's just a swab. You send it back in, and you get your genetic profile. And they'll actually show you, you know, what areas of the world do your DNA come from. Now, I don't want to show mine because I'm Filipino and basically I'm genetic meatloaf. So I'm from everywhere. I am the world. If everyone married everyone else on this planet, you'd look like me.
I got to get on this and see if we're related. 23andMe is an online genetic analysis company named after the 23 pairs of chromosomes in your DNA, with over 75 online genetic reports in categories like ancestry, wellness, traits, and even health. You can learn more about who you are and where you're from. Ancestry reports include ancestry composition, haplogroups, Neanderthal ancestry, and even your DNA family. You can use a tool called the DNA Relative Finder to find and connect with new relatives, and you can learn how your DNA influences your traits and how it relates to your caffeine consumption, your muscle type, your genetic weight, and more with 23andMe's wellness and traits reports. They've got a ton of really fantastic stuff that they can do with the data. 23andMe's carrier status reports meet FDA requirements, so you can find out if you're a carrier for certain inherited conditions like cystic fibrosis and hereditary hearing loss. Understand what makes you, you. Get over 75 genetic reports and start exploring your DNA today at 23andme.com/twit. That's 23andme.com/TWIT. And we thank 23andMe for their support.
You know, I found out that I'm actually lactose intolerant genetically.
Through 23andMe?
Through 23andMe. But it doesn't really affect me. It affects the people around me. So it's all good.
All right. So when we go and eat pizza, we're not going to hang out.
I got
we're
my own
booth. Have to switch that.
It's all good.
Well, thanks for the heads up on that. I appreciate that. All right. So let's get into the FLIR One.
So here it is. This is the little module that they left behind for us to play with. And they have a version of this for Android. They have a version of this for iOS. But I had their engineers in the studio, and I had a chance to speak with Rebecca Potter, mm-hmm. who is a project manager at FLIR. And I asked her about the Lepton camera.
Rebecca, tell me a little bit about Lepton. So the left-hand camera is a camera that FLIR developed a few years ago. We wanted to miniaturize IR cameras, similar to how CMOS has miniaturized visible cameras for cell phones. So we've made two products. We brought the price point down on our consumer model to $199, and then we've upgraded our resolution to produce a better picture with our Pro model. It's also a little bit more rugged. Both products have another feature that was something our users gave us feedback about, which is an adjustable connector. We call it the OneFit connector, so that if your phone is in a case, you can use the camera, or if you have a bare phone, you can use the camera, and it adjusts to both of those.
Once I've got a FLIR One or a FLIR One Pro, what does it enable me to see?
Well, we're seeing both thermal energy and visible information in our blended MSX image. So you can see the words on the screen that I'm pointing at. That would also be useful if you were looking in a fuse box. You could read the labels. What we've also done is integrated with the wearables. So I've got an iWatch right here. And that's useful if I want to hold up the camera and look at something. I can see it on my iWatch. I can take the picture and I can review it right here on the wearable. So we think that's a useful tool for folks who are maybe crawling around in an attic or trying to get behind a sink, something like that. Yeah.
Rebecca, this is always technology that I love to see. It's technology that I love to play with because it allows me to do things like, for example, take images of my home and find out where heat is leaking, or go into my data closet and find out if something is running hot. The possibilities are only limited by your imagination.
We have seen a lot of use cases. FLIR has high-end customers in search and rescue and military. And on the lower end, we're seeing people use it for all sorts of on-the-job tasks, HVAC inspection, electrical plumbing. So we're really excited about the new markets that we're opening up to.
Now, all right. You know, one of the things I like about this is the fact that they have accounted for the fact that people put their phones in cases. It's this fancy new thing. And anytime I've had a dongle that tries to plug in,
it's
I typically have to take the case off. Which,
yeah, and nobody wants to do that. You bought the case to protect your phone. You don't want to have to, yeah.
But what they've done with this little screw right here.
That's so smart.
This raises and lowers the connector so that, you know, even if you've got a suit, like this one will fit on an OtterBox, which is basically putting a tank around your phone. And then you can go all the way down to this. There's actually some of the shallow profile phones so that this part will always butt up against the bottom of either the phone or the case. Brilliant design. Actually, I think everyone should be doing that.
And this is something that works with both iOS and Android, right?
Right. So they have different versions. There's the Lightning version for iOS. There's the USB-C version for Android. I will say this, and I know you're going to like this because you're an iOS fan. The iOS version does work better.
Really?
It does. It's not the hardware or anything. It's just that when you're developing for iOS, it's one phone. It's a camera how to interface with it.
That's a given. Yeah.
On certain phones, like on the Pixel, this works beautifully.
Yeah.
On my 3T, the frame rate actually drops down. So there's some communications issues.
But that's
a thing. Now, the way that works is if you can see this, Alex, there's actually two cameras here. So I've got a regular camera, and then down here I've got Lepton. This has its own battery, and then it allows me to composite the image to show detail that I wouldn't previously be able to see. Let's take a look at some of the things that we've shot. For example, this strapping man right here. This is our cameraman. And what this allows you to do is you can go back after the fact and scrub between the thermal and the composite. Now, the cool thing about this is it gives you all the detail that a standard thermal camera wouldn't do. Like, for example, a standard thermal camera wouldn't show you, like down in the bottom here, you wouldn't be able to see the text because this would all just be hot. It would all just be a blob of heat.
So it's actually more detailed than what
Far more detailed. Amazing. And then I can go, like, for example...
Is that Jason?
Yeah. I didn't realize this, but infrared really shows off wrinkles. It really does. Look at that. That's not so great. Oh, here's something that's cool. So we went back into our power vault, where all the power runs through, and you can clearly tell where the heat is. Now, the funny thing is these don't feel hot to the touch.
Because
we don't register heat. We register differences in heat. This will actually show, like,
where the heat is concentrated, basically.
Precisely. And remember, this is not near IR. Near IR is all reflected IR.
Yeah.
This is emitted IR. That's heat that's actually coming from those parts. Now, this one's interesting. Can you tell which one of these circuit boxes is attached to the rest of the office and which one is attached to the studio?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's this sort of stuff. It's like, okay, well, obviously, the one on the left has far more current running through it, and that's the one that's connected to our studio setup here. This is the transformer, so all the power in the building comes through this, which is kind of interesting because there's a heat bloom that I didn't expect to see. Can you tell where the air conditioning vent is?
That is awesome.
Actually, this is something else I kind of liked.
Yeah, what is this?
This is the main. So this feeds the building. It does not feel hot. In fact, it feels cold. Mm-hmm. But in this image, there's a lot of IR being emitted from that conduit. And this is one of these things, again, where it just kind of changes the way that you look at the world around you. I use this all the time now. I have a previous version of this.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm going into a data center, because it allows me to see if equipment has been located in the wrong place. I want all my hot items near the top because I don't want that heat to be coming up through everything else in the rack. This, you know, it's not just a toy. This is a valuable tool to have.
Well, I could see that, you know, if you're doing some plumbing or, you know, you're about to, like, you know, bust a hole in some drywall or something, you want to know what's on the other side. You want to know, you know, what you can and can't touch, what's too hot and what isn't or hot enough. Or if you're having overheating problems at home or even in a car, I feel like this could be really, really useful, like you said, to kind of find where those hotspots are, right?
You know how they always tell you that you're not supposed to daisy chain, what do they call it, extension cords and power strips?
Yeah.
I can actually show that. I did a setup at home. I just plugged a bunch of stuff in.
That's awesome.
And you could see the power strips got hotter and hotter and hotter as I got closer to the source because that one had all the current rushing through it. And it's sort of like, all the stuff that you were told as a kid actually does happen.
Well, okay, so I can see the practicality here. If you're a plumber, if you're, you know, a maker, if you're a mechanic, if you're working in server rooms, whatever, right? But there are those existing thermal cameras that you mentioned that don't necessarily offer some of the detail that we're talking about How does this compare price wise?
This starts at $200. They dropped the price. I mean, it used to start at $400, and the pro version of this is $400 if you want to get a bit better resolution.
And is it saving all your stuff in the cloud or what?
No, it's on the device.
It's all on the device.
Which mine does sync to the cloud. So all of this stuff is now in my Google Photos folder. But you know, again, it's at a good price point.
Mm-hmm.
$200 is just about right for someone to start playing with it. And just take this and run it through your house, because I can't tell you all the places where you're going to find it useful. You're going to find that out. You're going to go, oh, wow, this is really good for me to figure out when my cooking is done. Because this does give you there's actually a thermal reader on this. It will tell you exactly how hot something is.
Yeah.
You can like find leaks in your wall. Found one yesterday. I was able to find pests, because I went outside into the garden, and in San Francisco it's nice and cool, and I pulled this out and I saw all these little moving heat blobs. I'm like, oh my goodness, those are like rodents.
Yeah.
And
that's amazing.
You can't hide from me. I can see you through the soil. I
mean, if they're collected there, that would be a heat source.
Yeah, I saw it. So I'm like, oh, look, there's a little nest. Yay.
That's amazing stuff. Well, thanks so much for showing that off with us. Really fascinating. That's the FLIR 1 thermal camera, right?
FLIR 1 and the FLIR 1 Pro. $199 and $399, depending on how much resolution you want. They have both Android and iOS versions. Like I said, the iOS version does work a little bit better, at least on my setup. However, if you've got something like a Pixel, the Android version is perfect.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much for capping that up for us. We're going to have more. We're going to be playing some video games here. You're going to see some arms flailing around as we get playing on the Nintendo Switch. We're going to still have that review of the Huawei Watch 2 from Jason Howell. But first, let's take a moment to talk about Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, one of the sponsors of this episode. If you're trying to get a mortgage, and, you know, I think we've been through this process. I was doing it recently just to get a car loan, and I wish there was some sort of equivalent for that side of the world. But if you're trying to get a mortgage, you know what it's like. Going to the bank, having to shuffle around documents, long lines. Honestly, it can be a real pain. Well, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans totally changes the game. It's a mortgage experience unlike any other. And let's be real, the mortgage experience was not keeping up with the times. It was dated, and it needed a client-focused technological revolution. And that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. And it's really, really simple. You can do the whole thing online. And it allows you to fully understand all the details throughout this process and be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information quickly with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's also powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. And based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of your home loan information and options and what you qualify for and help you find the loan that is right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS. That's rocketmortgage.com/NSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of the new Screensavers and some other shows that we do.
Yeah, no, I've had them actually on all my shows, I think.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rocket Mortgage.
All right. Well, I think it's time to get into the Huawei Watch 2 review from Jason Howell. You're not wearing a smartwatch.
I had a smartwatch that was waterproof, except it wasn't waterproof.
Oh, no. Yeah. Do you want to name names? Do you want to call anybody out?
No, I think it was my fault. I may have accidentally read waterproof when it actually said water resistant.
Ooh, okay. All right. Well, let's get into Jason Howell's review.
I'm here with, some might call it the better of the choices for Android Wear 2.0 devices right now. It's the Huawei Watch 2. I was a big fan of the original Huawei Watch. This one's a little bit sportier. Let's dive into the specs and see what we think here. It's a 1.2-inch AMOLED display, 390 by 390. That AMOLED display is going to be good on the battery. 4 gigs of onboard storage, not a whole lot. NFC, GPS, Bluetooth, heart rate monitor underneath if you want to, use that in some of the fitness aspects. There's a speaker on board here for taking calls. This particular model doesn't have a SIM card slot, but you can get that feature. And even without, you can do Wi-Fi calling routed through your phone. So that's a nice feature. And like I said, NFC, so you can do mobile payments. That's another feature of Android Wear 2.0. So it's got some of the specs that you're looking for to support Android Wear 2.0. Let's dive into the design. This outer number ring bezel is made of ceramic, though it doesn't rotate. A lot of people see this and think it's going to rotate. Sorry, divers, you're not going to go diving with this. The included watch strap, I feel like, is a little cheap looking and kind of, I don't know, just kind of cheap, essentially. But you can swap that out. The straps are totally removable, so that's nice. The watch design as a whole felt a little too casual, a little too sporty for me, especially when you compare it to the original Huawei watch at first. But I would say that I came around to it over time. And when I worked out at the gym wearing it, it felt right at home on my wrist. Big props for being super comfortable and pretty light compared to a lot of the other wearable devices that I've worn. You almost forget that it's on your wrist. And then as you can see, 2 buttons on the side for shortcuts. Those are assignable as you like. The display is AMOLED. Like I said, it's really sharp. I would say 390 by 390 is right about where it needs to be. And by the way, it's good in sunlight. I had no problems in sunlight there, so I like the display a lot. The big selling point for this watch, in my opinion, is its battery life. It's a fantastic wear device if battery is most important to you. Just as an example, I charged it up on Friday morning. I wore it all through the weekend. It wasn't until about sometime on Sunday that it switched into something called watch mode. Watch mode is a low power mode that extends the battery. I didn't even have to charge it up until Tuesday morning. It only gives you the time and it counts your steps. Everything else, like notifications, all that is shut off. So it makes that watch that's on your wrist actually usable throughout that time. Very nice feature for people wanting better battery life out of their wearable. As far as performance, I missed the digital crown found on some other watches, strangely. Some things like Assistant had a little bit of a stutter and a lag, so things were a little bit slower launching into it. But overall, I thought it was okay. It also includes some watch faces that I feel are a little on the cheesy side, but to each their own. Overall, the long-lasting battery, the comfort, and relatively small footprint, I think, are the selling point of the Huawei Watch 2. This is $299.99. You can also get a classic for $369.99. Overall, I was really won over time with the Huawei Watch 2. Initially, it felt just a little too casual, but at a certain point, I really got used to it, and especially the battery life and the comfort. I think you're going to have a hard time finding another Android Wear device that matches this on that front. I'm Jason Howell. Of course, you can catch me on Tech News Today. I'm also doing a whole lot of Android coverage on All About Android each and every week.
All right, Padre, it's time to play ARMS. I've been playing ARMS maybe about almost 2 weeks now, and I think Nintendo's got a hit on their hands. I want to show you how easy this game is to play.
Okay, yeah. So you gave me a quick primer before the show, and you gave me these because I have no idea how to... You basically just keep pushing the buttons.
Exactly. Now, if you really enjoy this, and basically you've just been playing on everybody else's Switch, but if you decide to buy a Switch for yourself and you want to chill on the couch,
this is the game to get.
Well, this is definitely one of the games. I think Mario Kart's right there. Basically, when it first came out, you know, Zelda Breath of the Wild was the only reason to buy this. Now you have another reason in Mario Kart, and even more so in ARMS. I think this is going to be just as fun with friends as Mario Kart is.
Is this like a Street Fighter type deal?
It's a little different, right? So instead of Street Fighter being like that side-to-side, you know, a fighter, and we can take a look at Street Fighter after this, this is basically kind of over-the-shoulder viewpoint. And instead of having basically to have in Street Fighter where you get closer and kind of fight closer, this is a game where you want to maintain distance. You want to actually plan moves out a little bit differently. So if you were into this, this would be the controller for when you're chilling on your couch. This is a different and more fun way to play, I think. This is the motion controllers with the Joy-Cons, and let's get right into it.
So you give the physical controllers to the guy who's really out of shape.
I'm giving you the easier way to start. And so you choose different little basically fists for your arms, and each character has these basically spring-loaded arms that they choose. So press your left and right buttons there, and we're good to go. And as you can see, each environment is...
Hey, stop that!
Each environment is different and uses space in really interesting ways. If you want to jump, if you want to jump, you hit your bumpers. And that's basically it. So what you're doing right now with your arms flailing is basically the physical motion control equivalent of button mashing. And despite you looking really ridiculous right now, you're actually keeping up with me.
That's how silly this is. All right.
All right.
Do not like.
All right, so you just triggered a power up.
Oh, power this.
And you're about to beat me. Let me see if I can stage a comeback here. All right, so I'm playing as Kid Cobra. He has some slick, like, breakdancing style moves. You're Ribbon Girl, one of the, it seems like, more popular characters in this title so far. And I'm down on my last leg. I got a stage to come back. Oh, that's embarrassing. That is embarrassing. I just lost. Padre won. Oh, man.
I'm pretty sure I pushed a button.
I swear I'm actually pretty good at this game.
You cannot defeat the flail.
The flail of Ribbon Girl. That's awesome.
Okay, that is fun, but I'm
not so again, like if that's this is if you're getting friends over, you're playing in your living room. This is the version you're going to want to play with.
Fun.
If you're playing by yourself, you want to sit on the couch. This is the controller to go for.
Now, if you've got friends, only one set can be using these, right?
No, you can have up to four sets at a time connected to the Switch. But I think you can only actually play two. No, yeah, you can play up to four people. So if you do that,
that would get messy.
You need to make sure that you have enough room in your living room for that, because...
Now, if I wanted to, I could put this in the holder and use it as
exactly,
a controller.
Exactly. There is a little holster, and you can play it that way as well. Now, just to actually, like, figure out timing and precision, if you don't want to just flail wildly and run around the room...
That's not sustainable.
There's actually a volleyball version of a fighting scenario and hoops, which are both pretty great and pretty compelling as well inside of here. Now, the Switch is actually turning into kind of quietly like a really great system for fighting games. There's Ultra Street Fighter 2, which came out not too long ago, and there's a bunch of old school Neo Geo games like Fatal Fury and all that good stuff. But they just announced a new... Do you remember Shaq Fu for, I think it was the Sega Genesis and the Nintendo Entertainment System?
That was such a bad game.
It was terrible.
It was a
1994.
Horrible game.
For some reason, they're
making
a
lot
of
hype.
Shaq Fu.
Oh,
for some reason, they're making a new Shaq Fu, and that's out for the Switch. Let's take a look at the trailer for that. Now, this is ridiculous. And Shaq Fu, as we said, it was bad. Well, thanks. This is the old school version of Shaq Fu.
Oh my gosh, this is so many bad memories. Oh wow.
Yeah. And as they acknowledge, it sucked. Well, there's going to be a new version that's coming out for the Switch. I don't know if it's going to have motion controls or not, but there's a lot of like really interesting stuff happening in the fighting game space. And it's a lot of it's happening on the Switch. You'd think that kind of fighting games had been done. They figured it out. Baby. Street Fighter's the paradigm. But there's some innovative cool stuff happening in fighting games.
Actually, that looks right kind of good.
It looks like it might not suck.
Well, I mean, the bar is really low as far as for being Shaq better Fu. Than the previous.
For Shaq Fu, yeah. So I think there's going to be a lot of really interesting stuff happening here for the Switch with fighting games.
Wasn't there part of Shaq Fu where you could get a power up by shooting like a free throw?
Yes. Yeah.
That was bad. Just completely made no sense.
The whole game didn't make any sense at all. I mean, just the title Shaq Fu doesn't make much sense. Anyways,
you've loaded up your Switch. My gosh.
Yeah, I've got all the games. Well, you know, I'm testing stuff.
That's true.
This is part of the job, Padre. Part of the job.
But I mean, all these classics like Fatal Fury. Oh my gosh, I remember playing that in the arcades.
Yep. So I think ARMS. If you have a Switch. You need to have Zelda, you need to have Mario Kart, and now I think you need to have ARMS.
That's
the bottom line.
Okay, I was totally spazzing out, and I know you were going really, really light because you were explaining it. But yeah, it is kind of fun.
It's good stuff, right? Yeah, so I don't know. Is this enough to convince you to buy a Switch, or are you going to be playing on mine all the time?
Well, okay, so I have a different schedule of technology. What I typically do is I wait for Leo to get bored with it, and then I steal it.
Well, that works
out. So he'll be bored with the Switch, and then I'll have a Switch.
All right, awesome. Good stuff.
Was that live? Dang. Okay, never mind. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, Leo's still on vacation, so he won't be paying attention to that one. Well, that is the gist with ARMS. We've got a call for help coming up about video editing, and this is a question that you'll be able to answer. I'll be able to talk to you a little bit as well. But first, Megan Maroney is going to break down Windows Hello for us. Let's get right into it.
There comes a time in every Mac user's life when the romance begins to fade. And after years of contentment, she wakes up one day and looks around and asks, "Is this it? Is this all there is? What happened to the romance? All the spark is gone." So she begins to look around, check out what else is out there, you know, just to see. Leo let me borrow his Surface Book for my experimental phase, and so you get the benefit of a few of the tips I'm learning in my new romance. Let's start with Windows Hello. Windows Hello has been around since the first iteration of Windows 10, but many people are just getting around to using it as they upgrade to a device that actually supports it. And it's getting better. Depending on your hardware, you can use Windows Hello to open your computer with your face, with your fingerprint, or your iris, and there will probably be more biometric login possibilities in the future. Ear prints, anyone? First things first, security. Those of you used to having Apple products will be happy to know that Windows Hello encrypts and stores your biometric information on your device. It's not uploaded to the cloud. To set up Windows Hello for facial recognition, go to Settings and then Sign In Options. Under Windows Hello, select Setup, then select Get Started to follow the directions. If you wear glasses, there's even a way to customize it so that it will recognize you with or without your specs. Once it's set up, you can kiss your passwords goodbye. If you prefer a password or a PIN, you can use those instead. I'm Megan Maroney. I host iOS Today every Monday and Tech News Today every Monday through Friday.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Megan. That, you know, she made it look pretty easy there.
She's
breaking it down.
I am a very strong Windows user, and I do not use Windows Hello.
Well, if you wanted to.
I should now.
She just showed you how.
Thank you, Megan.
All right. Well, it's time for a call for help. All right, Adam from Fort Wayne, Indiana, reached out to us. He's an IT pro, but he needs some help with video editing, something you and I both know a little bit about.
That's our world.
And he left a voicemail for us.
Okay. Hi, Padre. Hi, Nate. This is Adam from Fort Wayne, Indiana. I'm just wondering, I'm switching over from a MacBook Pro to a Windows laptop. I have a ThinkPad. And I'm looking for an iMovie replacement that I can use. Do you guys have any suggestions? Thanks.
All right, great question.
Yeah, and so this is interesting. Back in the days,
yeah,
and that was a Tuesday for reference, back on the day Tuesday, we used to have Windows Movie Maker.
Yes.
It was something that was free that was provided with, I think, Windows, like, XP 2000.
It was basically Microsoft's version of iMovie.
Right.
And before I really got into Final Cut myself, I was using Windows Movie Maker left and right. It was solid software.
It was solid.
It was competent.
It worked. It understood many different file formats. It was easy for someone to just jump in, put in a bunch of their pictures, some music, maybe a video clip or two, and be done with it. But then mysteriously, it just disappeared. They removed it from all the more recent Windows versions, and now they've brought it back. You may have heard of the Windows 10 Creator Package. It's coming out in the fall. And the whole idea is they've created something that is sort of the spiritual successor to Windows Movie Maker. They call it Story Remix.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing about Story Remix is I did play with it because I've got an advanced copy build of it. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I will say is it is very much tied in to the Microsoft ecosystem.
Yeah.
So they want you to be using Photos. They want you to be sharing it with your Microsoft contacts. They want you to be fully invested in the Microsoft world. So there are some things like file format compatibility and shareability with others that aren't great. I mean, don't get me wrong. It is a fantastic product, especially if you want to do one of these collaborative products, projects.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you can do is you can invite friends and family who are all also on Windows 10, and you can, like, pass the project around. I want to make this edit. You want to make that edit. That's fantastic. That's wonderful. If you can wait, this is free.
Yeah, but you said that's coming this fall?
It's coming this fall. I mean, if you're in the build program, you can actually get it right now.
Okay, okay.
So that's how I got my version.
So that makes sense if you're all in on the Windows ecosystem. You've already got your stuff loaded up in all of their other apps. But, you know, Adam's coming from a Mac to Windows. This is his first machine. He might not be fully into that ecosystem yet. There are other options out there, though, but they're going to cost you, right?
They're going to cost, and it depends on exactly how advanced you want it to get.
Mm-hmm.
So the one that I would suggest, it's a $70 program called Adobe Premiere Elements. And actually, if you go to my computer, Anthony, what we do is we've got it loaded up here. This is their 30-day free trial. It kind of works like Adobe Premiere, but it's more like iMovie. It's designed for the iMovie crowd.
Which makes sense because this is kind of that I've never really done much video editing before. I'm going to try it out. Maybe it's new. You want kind of the easiest learning curve possible, right?
Right, exactly. And this is one of these drag-and-drop editors, which is one of the things I liked about the Movie Creator in the first place. So, for example, I've got a demo folder here filled with some assets. So let's pull up this IFA video from last year. All I have to do is bring it over and just drop it straight onto the timeline. It will import it. And now I have the ability to cut, paste, run special effects as necessary, trim it, et cetera, et cetera. So this is the kind of ease of use that you would expect out of something like iMovie.
Yeah.
And for that, it actually works quite well. I mean, that was a video clip. Here's an image. I could put a transition between the two of them. So let's take a cross dissolve, just drop it down between them. And when I'm done, I can just move my scrub to the front. And there you go.
Yeah, and you know, no disrespect to Microsoft out there, but Adobe, this is what they do.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to abandon this product after you've been using it for a few years. They make tools for creatives, and this seems like it has that same kind of usefulness and easy, and just you can get right into it. You know, this looks great.
Yeah, it's much more accessible, and I mean, you can do some decent special effects. I mean, they've got filters, they've got effects that you can drop on top. So, for example, I can go into effects and I can say, let's do a lens flare.
Nice.
And now I can play with all the parameters on my lens flare. I mean,
J.J. Abrams would be proud.
I know, exactly. So if this was Star Trek, that would be about 80% of the frame, and it would be brilliant.
Awesome. $69 isn't cheap, but if you're going to be doing a lot of these, if you're going to be really like, you know, your kids' birthdays and special events, or maybe you got like a big family reunion coming up, or in your case, if you're meeting the Pope, it seems like $69 well spent.
Now, but here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to go from iMovie on a Mac to something on Windows, why not get something that's a bit more powerful? It will have more of a learning curve, but then it is more on par with what we use for video editing, say, here at Twit TV.
I like what
now,
you're saying.
I would not say to go with Creative Cloud 6 because that's kind of expensive. It's a subscription that you have to pay every year. A lot of people don't like that. However, because Creative Cloud 6 is out, it means that you can go onto something like eBay and buy a copy of 5 or 5.5 for next to nothing.
Not a bad idea, actually.
And those are all perpetual licenses.
Yeah.
So once you buy it, it's yours.
You're probably going to have what? Is it download codes or is it discs? Or
they'll send you the discs. So they actually have like a retail bundled package. Yeah. And the nice thing about doing something like that is if you could get a copy of, say, 5 for $45 or $50,
yeah.
it's now yours. It's never a subscription. There's never anything else to pay, and it works just fine. In fact, I've got it loaded on my computer right now. This isn't even 5.5. This is Adobe Premiere version 5. And believe it or not, if you've ever watched any of the projects that I've done on KnowHow, any that you recorded, I'm using this.
Really?
I'm not using 6 at home. I'm using 5. And this is what we used to edit. It's just a so much more of a powerful editing tool.
Yeah, you got a full timeline there. You can still do drag and drop.
Yeah, this is the full NLE experience. I mean, this gives you all the nice transitions. This gives you all the fantastic ways to scale and change your timeline. It gives you all of the special effects that you might want to use in the future. If you were going to go ahead and play with video editing, I'd say spend a little bit of extra money. And I know it's not going to be easy because there is definitely a learning curve, but you'll be so much happier with the end result if you pay just a tiny bit of money and start learning on a full NLE or nonlinear editor.
Awesome. Great. Well, awesome options. Something to look forward to. Yep. If you don't want to spend any money, just wait until the fall for Microsoft's own baked-in solution.
And of course,
Adobe's got a couple different options for you as well. That's great. Well, next week, we're going to have the home theater geek himself, Scott Wilkinson. He'll be our co-host here. And if you have any tech questions for him, definitely throw those our way. Here's how.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Now, coming up next, we do have the mailbag, one of my favorite parts of the show where we take some questions from you. We have a nice sit down around the fire and see what we can do to help you out. But before we get there, there is one more serious segment that we have to do here on the new screensavers. Folks, some people go to court. Some people go to the track. Some people try to compete in any way possible. But here at Twit, there's only one acceptable way to show your dominance of geekdom. And that is Game of Geeks. Welcome to Game of Geeks. It's the Twit show where we take the contestants and we put their tech knowledge to the test. I'm Father Robert Ballister. Let me welcome you with our lineup. Of course, we've got Jason Calacanis, host of This Week in Startups. He is an angel investor extraordinaire. We've got Leo Laporte, who I'm not really sure what he does, but he hangs around here a lot. So, yeah, that's how that works. And, of course, Ian Thompson from The Register. He is the nicest Brit to come across the pond. Gentlemen, hey, we're going to play a little game.
General Cornwallis.
Called Password.
Oh,
Password.
I love this game.
We know the password rules are very simple. You get 60 seconds on the clock. I've got a stack of cards. Your job is to get the audience to know what is on your card without saying the name or saying anything that rhymes with it. You get 5 passes. If it's too difficult, if they're not getting it, just pass and move on to the next.
Should we let
ready
the chat
to play?
Room play, too?
Chat room can play.
So if the chat room says it, somebody's going to have to watch
chat room. They're delayed 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah, they're never going to get
they're
it.
They're never going to get it.
Okay. Chat room, you're slow.
All right.
Are you ready to play the Game of Geeks?
All right, let Neil Farage do it.
Let's see.
Neil, come on over. Let's get some Farage going on. You get 60 seconds. Remember, it's all about speed. All about speed. And those are the people you have to convince.
Ian, speak English for this.
Here we go.
We just invented the bloody language.
And in 3, 2, 1.
Redmond gaming console, latest issue.
Xbox.
Latest one.
Xbox One. Got it. Next.
Oh, it's kind of like Dungeons & Dragons, but with a more personal approach, with people actually getting dressed up in the kit.
You got it. Wow. Oh, we got geeks.
Okay, the first thing you'll hear from a video game which tells the first person who's going to play it to get into position to do it.
Got it.
Okay, goes around eating pills and eating ghosts.
Yep.
Mad Max reboots, one-armed woman.
Oh, Lord.
Yep. There you go.
Whoa!
15 seconds.
Google's video channel without the adverts.
Yep. There you go. 9 seconds.
Again from Redmond, it's something you wear on your wrist that's pretty much useless.
3.
I would have skipped that one.
Ian, thank you very much. That gives you a total of 50 points. Not bad for a first
one
start.
One every 12 seconds. Would have been one every...
Pretty good. I was told there wasn't any math.
There's no math, Leo. Actually, next up is Mr. Leo Laporte.
Oh,
we're
going to
give Jason the anchor position. Leo.
I like it.
Are you ready to play?
I am ready to play.
Game of Geeks.
This is hard.
Here we go with your first one and
Toby Nerves.
All right. One of the founders of Napster.
Sean Parker's right.
There we go.
This is the technology, artificial intelligence technology, that won the Go tournament, bested all the Go players. It comes from the big search engine. And
DeepMind.
Thank you. DeepMind. He is the number one on YouTube. The biggest YouTube channel is owned by...
There we go.
Thank you. This is the game Jeff Bridges was in it, where he had...
There we go.
It was Tron. This is a card game you play, and you have to play against one another. It was the original of these card games. It involved prestidigitation. It involved sorcery. It was called... Magic the Gathering. Thank you very much. Now, if you had a way of measuring Newton's law that keeps you glued to the ground, you'd be measuring something called...
5 seconds.
More.
2 seconds.
More.
No, I'm sorry.
Gravitational waves.
Gravitational waves.
I know he said waves and she said gravity, but I feel like it didn't go together.
No, give me that.
Wow.
You don't get gravity waves. Gentlemen, I'm sorry. That gives Leo Laporte 50 points.
Oh! Oh,
five right.
It's up to you. You got to win.
Okay, Jason.
This could save us the pain of a tie.
Jason
break.
Is notice literally. Nobody passed. Can you master the pass?
Excellent game.
You have five passes.
Work with me, people.
Let's play. Are you ready to play the game of geeks?
I'm ready.
All right. And?
Okay. Pass.
Good.
This is a TV show about hackers that was awesome with Christian Slater. Pass that.
Okay.
This is a hacker conference in Vegas. Where, if you're a good hacker, you're a white. And if you're a bad one...
There you go.
Bitcoin is an example of a...
currency.
A little more. There's a word in front of it.
There you go. That's 40 points.
Okay. I drove up here in a car, and it has a feature.
Oh, there we go. That's 5 points. Passed. Passed.
The worst MP3 player made by a company in Redmond was?
There we go.
Oh, he wins.
That's it?
Okay, the droid from the new Star Wars Episode 7. And if you need a hotel but you can't afford it and you want to be on a couch.
Oh, that...
Very good. Actually, you win, I think.
Gentlemen, not only did he win, he destroyed it.
Okay, let's just say he won.
Destroyed. Give me that crown.
Jason, it was the greatest victory in the history.
If you could please assume the position, Jason.
Of Game of Geeks.
As we now pass on the regal title.
Really happy.
One day it will be mine.
The winner
One day.
Of Game of Geeks.
Yeah.
Oh, man, he looked way too happy wearing that crown.
He was so invested in that competition. I'm not going to take anything away from him, but remember, for that session, we did record 3 competitions.
Yeah.
And he was, every time he didn't win, it was just like a little more Jason bubbling to the top. He's like, okay, it's on. It's on.
Well, I'm glad he got at least one of them.
He did.
All right, well, it's time for the mailbag. Let's see what we got here.
Magic mailbox. Here we go.
Just rolls in on its own.
I know, right?
Every time.
It's like automated or something. It's a robot.
All right, so we got a couple questions here. I'll start off. This one's from Matthew Q. It says, hello, I have an old Wi-Fi router, 7 years. That is old, and I think it's time. I think it's ready for retirement. At this point, it does not easily give me a Netflix episode in the bedroom, only 15 feet away. I need to replace it, and I don't know what's best for me. I have a couple of Rokus that are Wi-Fi only. I have my PS4, which is hardwired to the modem. I have several Echoes, computers, iPads, phones, etc. I live in a one-bedroom apartment, so not much coverage is needed, but I don't know what router is recommended for this living situation. For the situation living in a large apartment building, the Wi-Fi analysis is off the charts busy. Do I need mesh or just a more powerful router that is able to help cut through the noise and give me a stronger signal? Thank you in advance for your help.
That is actually a great question, and I know a lot of people suffer from this.
Yeah.
A few issues with this. We're gonna go through them one by one. The first, and let's start at the bottom of this question, do I just need a more powerful signal? No, don't do this. This is actually the problem that we see in high-density areas like apartment buildings. If everybody turns their access points up, what happens is
more noise.
It's more noise. It just becomes a cacophony. He said he did a Wi-Fi analysis, which means I'm assuming he did something like Wi-Fi analyzer, went around his apartment and found that it was just being bombarded by, you know, 50 different SSIDs.
Yeah.
What you want to do is, and I know it's not going to affect the people living next to you, but you actually want to turn down the power on your APs. You want more APs, but at a lower power level. It makes the signal much more intelligible by your devices. The other thing is, just assume 2.4 gigahertz is dead. 2.4 gigahertz only has three channels, and I guarantee you, you've got a couple of Apple users there, and Apple routers will automatically jump between channels, which essentially jams both channels.
Yeah.
So just assume 2.4 gigahertz is gone. You need a 5.8 gigahertz router. If yours is 7 years old, it's probably not 5.8, which means a 5.8 is going to do you quite nicely. I'm going to give them. Is it okay if I give them two options?
Yeah, yeah, go for it.
Let's start with the economical option. Anthony, I think we have a link for this. An ASUS router. This is the ACRH13. It's a dual band, 2x2 MIMO. This will do about 1.5 gigabits per second on the wireless side. It's only $70. This is probably the lowest I would go. It does 802.11 A, B, G, N, A, C, Wave 2. It will support both 2.4 and 5.8 gigahertz.
And you still got plenty of Ethernet ports there for all your devices?
Precisely. This is probably one that's going to do you really well. I would say start with this before you get crazy with any other setup, because this will allow you to find out if 5.8 is going to clear up your problems.
Yeah. That's solid.
Now, there is another one. This is the one that I like. It's the one that I actually use at home. I love this thing. This is my backup. I'm one of these guys, when I buy something that goes into my infrastructure, I always get two, because
well, you know, you're going to like tell someone about it and want to give it to them.
Well,
or
no,
you want a backup.
I want a backup. Okay. So this has been configured exactly the same as the other one. So if my network goes down, I always have replacements for every piece.
So basically, you're making everything hot swappable, essentially.
Precisely. This, and Anthony, we do have a link for this. This is the Synology. This is an AC2600. This is a tiny bit more pricier. You're looking at between $250 and $280.
Yeah, this is an investment.
It's down to $240. Not bad. This is an investment, but it is an incredible investment. So this is a MIMO by 4. So it's twice the bandwidth of that ASUS router. This thing will absolutely wipe the floor with any other router out there, except for the super high-end ASUS routers that I played with. But the thing that I really love about the Synology are the apps. They have a system of plugins that they develop first for all their network-attached storage boxes that allow you to install plugins that will do things like Plex or storage plugins or cloud. You can make your own private cloud, VPN. You can run all of that on this one device. So even though it does have a higher price point, for that price, you are getting so much more than a router. This could be a router, your storage server, your backup server, basically everything you want it to be. Your VPN server. I mean, we've talked about the need for VPNs at your home. This would be that.
Yeah.
Look at switching to 5.8 gigahertz. Definitely don't think that a repeater is going to help, because all a repeater is going to do is jam up the air even more.
Yeah.
And look at replacing your 7-year-old router.
What do you think about, now they're going to be expensive too, but what do you think about mesh Wi-Fi systems in apartment buildings? Now, our viewer here has a one-bedroom apartment, right, which is actually what I'm living in San Francisco as well. Luckily, I don't have as much noise as it seems like he does, but still a decent amount. And of course, you know, it seems like mesh Wi-Fi is the latest and kind of the most popular new idea.
Mesh is popular because of its convenience, but the problem is mesh actually adds to the noise problem. You have to remember, when you're talking about a mesh, essentially what you're doing is you're communicating between multiple wireless devices anytime you want to send a packet through the network. That's retransmission and retransmission and retransmission. Now you've just increased the problem by three. What I would suggest, if you're working in a high-density area like an apartment building, is don't use mesh. In fact, go the opposite way. If you're in one of these buildings where you only have a wireless signal, of like, say, from the building, what I would do is I would take a device like this, or even a cheap device, something like a Linksys WRT54G running DDWRT, and turn it into a bridge. You take that wireless signal, turn it into a wired signal.
Yeah.
Now that wired signal is immune to all the interference in your building. You just wire to all the individual devices that you need, or put another AP where you have really bad signal. That is so much more of a better solution that will actually last. The problem with mesh is, if you get mesh, Maybe your neighbor gets mesh, and your other neighbor gets mesh, and the person up top and down below. And now
more noise, more
it's
noise.
Just solid RF noise.
You know, one thing I got to suggest here, too, which is just go wired for more stuff. Use the Ethernet ports. I mean, on my TV, it's you know, sitting on a stand. I've got my PlayStation there. I've got my Xbox. I've got my Switch. I've got my Apple TV. Some swapping out voice-controlled speakers, Rokus, all these sorts of things. And all of those are connected to Ethernet. I'm really only using Wi-Fi for my laptop, my phone, and some Sonos speakers I have.
That's the simple truth. I mean, it's physics. This is this is just physics. It has nothing to do with manufacture. Yeah. It's physics. Yeah. If you are broadcasting through the air, that is a shared medium. You are sharing it with everyone else who might be broadcasting. If you're using wired Ethernet, it's yours. You're the only one on that. You can run full bandwidth. Nothing else is going to interfere with it. So, given my druthers, I always, always go wired.
All right. And we've got one more question to answer.
I got another one. Yeah. I've got a question about video.
All right.
From, let's see, who is this from? From Matthew H. He says, hi, I have a technical question. I am wanting to multiplex four cameras tiled up on one screen simultaneously into one live stream, either Facebook Live or YouTube Live. All the cameras will be in the same room and do not need to feature zoom, special optics, etc. They can be a simple HD webcam, but I need to have them all tiled. I looked at OBS for controlling the for the controlling software, and it looks good, but not sure if I can feed four USB cameras simultaneously. Thoughts? Is there a better solution that won't break my hobbyist bank? Thanks. Okay. And
so it's basically some multicam stuff. He's going to have multiple cameras setting up, not going to need to change the angle or the view, but he wants to be able to bounce through them dynamically during a live stream.
Precisely. And actually, thankfully, we covered this on Know How. We had two episodes that we dedicated to this specific solution, live stream. Mm-hmm. Now, let me show you the hardware, because the hardware I really, really enjoy. This is the screen. So what you're seeing right now is a piece of hardware that allows me to take any four inputs, so four cameras, or two cameras, two laptops, or maybe a cable box, maybe a Roku, whatever it is, HDMI input, and I can tile it. I'm controlling it from my phone, so I can actually use my phone and this box like a low-cost TriCaster.
Nice.
The coolest thing about this, what I absolutely love about the solution, is the fact that this box actually has built-in streaming to YouTube, to Facebook, to Twitter even. So I don't even need a computer. I just plug my inputs in.
Can you do them all at the same time, or do you have to choose one at a time?
You can tile four.
Okay, so you can broadcast like YouTube and Facebook simultaneously?
Yes. Oh yes, yeah. Okay, I can send out multiple streams to the different providers. This is it. This is what the box looks like. So on the back I've got four inputs, HDMI 1, 2, 3, and 4, plus an out so I can monitor. And then I also have this. This is my Ethernet. This will also do wireless. And I have USB, so I can plug in, say, a USB camera or a USB headset and broadcast that way. But I don't need a computer. This will take my four cameras in. I can make custom screens. So I could do a 2x2, a full screen, a 4x4, and I can flop back and forth just like we do in our TriCaster.
Awesome.
But here's the big thing. These boxes start at $200 rather than $20,000. So this is definitely within the hobbyist budget. Now here's the thing. This was the Kickstarter version. Anthony, if you go back to their website, they've refined it, and they're going to start selling this to the mass market. They're just at the cusp. They need to make sure they've got the distributors. This four-port version is probably going to go for somewhere in the range of $350 to $500. But again, it sounds like a lot of money, but it's all self-contained. And this is something that you can travel with, make it super portable, which I really, really like.
Yeah, and compared to the Pro Gear, I mean, it's definitely a lot more accessible.
Right.
A lot more affordable.
One problem our mailbox, and that is the fact that this is HDMI input, not USB, so you do need four HDMI cameras. And if you don't have those, then that's an expense.
Yeah, if he's already bought the cameras, I'll have to see if that works out or not.
Right. But we did do another option on Know How, and that was to use Xcast or X. What is that? I'm sorry. Go to that website, Anthony. This was something that you can run on sort of hardware that you've got left over. It can't be Super N. Oh, sorry, XSplit Broadcaster.
So this would be great for gamers. Basically, you're using Twitch. You're going out to YouTube.
Yeah, and this will stream to multiple services at the same time. So Facebook, Twitter, YouTube Live, whatever it might be, Twitch. And I can plug in four USB cameras. So I've plugged in four Logitech 920 cameras, which will run you like $65 each. And I get four inputs. And then I can also mix down the audio, so where the audio is coming from. and I can switch back and forth just like I can with a TriCaster. However, you do need a decently powerful desktop, not a laptop. A laptop is going to choke. Get a desktop. So depending on if you have the hardware around or not, this could be less expensive or far more expensive than the screens.
Awesome, awesome. Well, great answers to those questions. Thank you so much, Padre, for joining me on this episode.
Thank
We're going to have
Nate.
Scott Wilkinson next week, so definitely tune in for
awesome.
That. And then Leo will be back
with
after that.
With all the stories from down south.
That'll be good. Thank you to our live studio audience for coming out, and hopefully you all enjoyed the show. We love having people here in the audience. If you want to join us live in person, just email tickets at twit.tv, and you can come check us out. And, of course, if you can't make it in person, you can see all of our shows on twit.tv/live as they're happening. Or if you want to see an old episode of the New Screensavers, just check out twit.tv/TNSS. You can subscribe and download at twit.tv/NSS. And let's see here. The show is recorded at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and 2200 UTC. Thank you so much for joining me, Padre.
Oh, Nate, it's been an actual absolute pleasure. It's so good to have you on board.
Yeah, my
pleasure. You were saying before the show that I think this is the first all-brown screensaver.
This might be a historic moment.
Hey, folks,
in Twit
what
history.
Can brown do for you?
That's a great question. All right, we'll be back next week with Scott Wilkinson. Thanks, everybody.